Okay. This morning, we're talking with Bill Gake. Bill was a former senior partner at Dwight Haskins, Touche Tohmatsu, and Nani Nani, something else. He also is...
Dwight and Touche.
Bill Dwight and Touche.
Dwight and Touche these days.
And he's also, just incidentally, the husband of Susie's cousin, Carolyn. So we have a great connection here. And, Bill and I have been associated for the last 20-some years, and I've just always delighted to hear his stories of management and supervision and just the kind of work he has done in his career. So what I'd ask Bill to do is to share with us just some stories this morning. In your readings, you've looked at all kinds of different supervisory models and principles involved in supervision at this level. Just as is in all of our other three modules, we're just talking with somebody who's been in the field, down the road quite a while, experienced this kind of work, and just can share with us just some personal accounts of how it works. So Bill, please just begin by just telling them a little bit about what you did with Deloitte, Dwight Touche, right?
And, Touche, yeah.
And kind of the sort of work you're doing now with your church, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, I graduated from Lehigh University in 1964. I got a master's degree from Florida State University in 1965 and then went to work for an accounting firm, Haskins & Sells, which through a series of name changes and mergers ultimately ended up as part of Deloitte & Touche, which is our name in the U.S. and globally the name Deloitte Touche Tohmatsu. And I spent my whole career just about in Atlanta, although I traveled all over the world with that firm. I had one brief interlude, and that was from 1966 through 1969. I spent 3.5 years with the United States Navy on a ship home ported in Yokosuka, Japan, but spending most of our time up in the Gulf of Tonkin. And I certainly learned a lot about leadership of men in that environment as well. Since I retired in December of 2002, I've moved with my wife to a home up here in near Tallulah Falls, Georgia. So you can get the maps out and find where Tallulah Falls is. It's up near the corner of Georgia where Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina all come together, and it's beautiful country up here. In my retirement, certainly doing a number of things for my church, Trinity Lutheran Church in Toccoa, Georgia. I'm on the board of elders there, and I'm also on a couple of not-for-profit boards here, the local Habersham County United Way, and an organization called the Mountain Circuit CASA, C-A-S-A, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. It's an organization that, under Georgia law, provides an advocate in the legal system for children that are under state care because they have either been abused or neglected. So typically there's an attorney for the state, and one or more attorneys for either or both of the parents or other interested relatives, but generally the child falls through the legal system, and this is an organization that provides specially trained advocates for the children. Now, it seems to me in talking about supervision, it's worth spending a little time talking about the difference between supervision and leadership. And I know thinking about my career, it's easy to confuse. There are situations where you need to lead. Elements of leadership include tone at the top, setting your own tone. You can even think about scriptural references to that when Paul, I believe, in writing to Timothy, talks about the example, the leadership tone that needs to be set by an elder or a pastor or a bishop. But supervision is more about direct contact with people who report directly to you. And I believe that supervision must be done on an individual basis. In other words, I believe that under a typical span of control environment, you shouldn't be supervising more than 5 to 7 people. So one question to look at in a supervisory situation is how many people you are being asked to supervise. And if it's more than 7, then you should consider whether a different organization is appropriate so that you're personally supervising only about 7 people. And again, that's because supervision is a personal endeavor between you and the person being supervised. And every match of a person being supervised and the task that you're asking them to do requires some special considerations. For example, has the person done it before? Have you done it before? Are they motivated to do it, or do they view this as just drudgery? Are they capable of doing it? Do they have the educational background to be able to do what needs to be done, or do you first have to teach them what to do? So if you think about that framework, there are elements of understanding the person's capability and motivation, and then developing a set of tactics that you will employ in supervising that person to get the job done. So my first advice would be to sort of analyze the relationship, the capabilities, and the motivation that the person has with you and with respect to the task at hand or the job at hand, and then to sit down and think about the best way to supervise that. In some cases, you'll want to have someone check in with you every day or every hour or every 6 hours to see how they're doing. In other cases, if they're highly motivated, highly trained, and you know they've done a particular task or job before, you can basically say, look, here's the end product I need. I think it'll, can we both agree that it'll take about a month to do this? And fine, I'll see you in a month, because you have a relationship and confidence that you know that will work. In other situations, you're going to have to break the ultimate final task into intermediate steps and ask somebody to report back. So my philosophy is analyze the task and analyze the capability and motivation of the person you're supervising, and then develop something that makes sense both from what needs to get done and from your relationship with the person and their capabilities and motivation to get that task done. So, Bill, I hope that's helpful.
That's very good. In fact, the first note I made, Bill, was when I was in Japan and working with a group of pastors. They were trying to figure out how to import or borrow some of these managerial and supervisory principles from U.S. Some sort of U.S. consulting agency was there. And one of the pastors, the first thing he said was, "Oh, in Japan, one manager may easily supervise up to 50 people."
Right. Well, I don't think that's possible. I think you can lead 50 people.
Right.
But I don't believe you can effectively supervise.
Yeah, 50 indeed,
people.
Indeed. Yeah. Very good. Well, you said you could.
If you go back to some of the early studies on management and supervision that were done by a guy named, I believe, Frederick Taylor at the Western Electric Company back in the, in the 20s. He made a couple of interesting insights. One is that if you just pay attention to people and what they're doing, no matter what else happens, they will do better. So if you can go in, for example, this was a more of a factory environment, but if you go into a factory environment and you increase the lighting and tell the people that that's good for them, they'll do better. If you, in fact, go in and decrease the lighting because you tell them it's better for them, they will do it better. So they will do things better simply because they believe that somebody is paying attention to them and cares about what they're doing. So that gets back to the notion of building a relationship with the people that you're supervising.
Yeah, very good, very good. Okay, could you share with us, I'd ask you a couple days ago to think back and just give us a couple just good stories that just sort of illustrate effective or ineffective or unusual supervision from your experience of either people.
Well, Sure. You know, we talked about the notion